On a pleasant afternoon that marked the middle of May, a small crowd gathered at an airfield on Long Island. A roped-off area was set aside for reporters, while farther back, spectators from the general public jostled for position. Nearby, on a small platform, a brass band played. A photographer snapped a picture of the crowd and the band. "You have to give Jake Melbourne credit," the photographer said. "He really knows how to put on a show." Jake Melbourne was a World War I ace, a celebrity daredevil aviator, and, as the photographer had noted, all-around showman. While other pilots wore brown leather jackets and drab wool pants for warmth, Jake wore a bright red leather jacket, adorned with epaulets. He wrapped his neck in a golden scarf and shod his feet in ostrich skin boots. Over the years, he'd become famous, winning various flying contests and plenty of notoriety. Now he was going after the biggest ribbon in aviation, the Orteig Prize. $25,000 to the first pilot to fly nonstop from New York to Paris, or vice versa. It meant hopping the Atlantic Ocean in one leap, and many people thought it couldn't be done. "What good is it if he gets himself killed?" one reporter asked. "It makes for a good headline," a second reporter answered. "Winning the prize would be a better one," another reporter said. "If anybody can do it, this guy can." "You think Melbourne's going to make it?" the photographer asked. "You really think he's going to be the one? What about this Lindbergh guy?" "Who?" the reporter said. "The guy with the silver plane. He's parked over at Curtis Field next door. Flew in last week from San Diego. Set a cross-country record on the way." "Oh, you mean Slim," the reporter said with disdain. "Not a chance. His plane's only got one engine. Melbourne's got two and can carry more fuel." "If you ask me, it can't be done," another reporter leaned in to say. "Four men have already been killed. Three other planes have crashed, and the French team and the White Bird are still missing. It's been a week. Wherever they are, they're not still flying." The White Bird was the English translation of l'Oiseau Blanc, the name Charles Nungesser and François Colly had given their airplane. They'd left Paris on May 8th in spectacular style, but hadn't been heard from since crossing the coast of Normandy. Searches for the plane and its crew were being carried out on both sides of the Atlantic, even as Melbourne and other contestants prepared for their attempts. "You wonder where Melbourne gets his money from?" the skeptical reporter continued. "Bird has the Wanamakers. Funk had Sikorsky." "I heard Melbourne is funding the flight himself," the photographer said. "And I heard he's flat broke and desperate for the prize money," the reporter replied. "Likes to gamble, you know." The photographer considered that. "Well, it doesn't get much higher stakes than risking your life. Makes you wonder why anyone would even try it." In a planning room, near the back of a hangar, Jake Melbourne and his financial backers were having a similar conversation. Melbourne stood tall with his boots on, hair slicked back and his red jacket hanging open. His meticulously trimmed mustache gave him a passing resemblance to Errol Flynn. He'd slept in very late in order to be rested for the long solo flight, but he looked tired and angry. "I'm not going," he insisted. "Not with that thing on board." He was pointing to a compact steamer trunk, which, though it was small in size, was extremely heavy. The men across from him seemed unimpressed by the outburst. There were three of them, very different from one another, but with a family resemblance. The older man in the center was thin and balding, with glasses and wearing a double-breasted Mackinaw overcoat. Beside him was a bruiser who looked like he'd come straight from the bare-knuckles boxing ring, or jail. His nose was flat, one eye recently blackened, his ears chewed up like he'd taken 100 punches to the head. The third member of the trio was younger still, of more average height and build, and he considered himself Jake's friend. But that didn't count for much at the moment. It was the older, bespectacled man who responded. "Listen to me, Jake. We're all here to help each other. Remember when the Irishman wanted to break your hands for stiffing them on the $3,000 you owed? We paid them off for you. Not only did we do that, we bought out your other markers and helped you buy this plane. Now, we need something from you." "I was going to pay off those markers after I won the prize," Jake said. "That was the deal. You get half, plus we sell the plane. The rest I keep." "That was the deal," the older man said. "We got a different one in mind now. In this deal, you get to keep the whole prize. You just have to deliver that trunk to a friend of ours on the continent. He'll meet you in Paris after you land. Melbourne shook his head. If I put that thing on my plane, I'll have to offload 50 gallons of fuel. One bad stretch of weather and I'll never make Paris. A little bit of a headwind and I might not even make the coast. You said going east instead of west puts the wind at your back, the older man insisted. I still need fuel. Maybe we could take out some other equipment, the youngest member of the trio said. I've heard Lindbergh isn't using radio. I heard he doesn't want a parachute. Says the equipment is too heavy and unreliable. The young man turned to Jake. You taught me how to dead reckon, he said. You can use a compass and your watch. Lindbergh's crazy, Melbourne replied. Once he takes off, he's going to vanish just like the French. I need that equipment, and I need every gallon of fuel. Why don't you put the trunk on a steamship? Then I'll meet your friend in Paris and tell him what ship it's on. The bruiser shook his head. Hoover's boys are closing in fast, and the docks are crawling with flatfoots looking for us. Besides, who can we trust? Hoover, Melbourne blurted out. You're telling me the Bureau of Investigation is looking for this thing? The older man nodded. We've had a misunderstanding with them, he admitted. Why do you think we funded you in secret?